Session number 16715, John Jarvis, Reel 6.
Mr. Jarvis, Reel 6. We were discussing the leisure activities that you had in Cyprus, Mr. Jarvis.
Yes. Well, we, after the putting it to say out of bounds for such as I was just as happy going to places like Limassol and Famagusta, where you got a nice promenade out the seafront. You could walk along there and there was ice cream. You know, there was all these mineral drinks and ice cream. And for me, I was pretty teetotal. You know, I like to drink, but not cognac. I would never touch cognac. It's firewater. And we could go to Limassol and places like that and spend a lovely Sunday and Sunday afternoon and with our bounds money-wise, you know. We could just manage to party, simple as that.
You mentioned brothels. Was there a lot of VD in the battalion?
No. You see, we all once had a lecture on VD and the man that gave it was an old regular and he laid it on. And I think he frightened three parts of us, you know. And I suppose when we got ashore, he was the first man in. But apart from that, he young kids like us, were young, immature, he frightened us, you know. He talked about the treatment and this umbrella style they have in the old days where they used to shove it up the a man's penis and open it out and then pull it out. And when they were telling you, when they're relating the story about the poor bloke in hospital, they used to light on and frightened us and we got a, you know, I was first introduced to that, the French letters and I didn't know what they were. Contraceptives, they call them now, don't they? I didn't know what it was. I thought maybe it must be Christmas, like, and we'd blow them up, blown and something. I'd never seen one.
When you said introduced to them, did the army used to give you them officially? Or
there was. There was places where you could go after you'd been in the brothel and they used to wash you and put some ointment, inside your penis. I've never been in one because I never went in brothel. You know, I was frightened, I'll tell you the truth. I wanted to go many times and I was scared stiff. I know we, as far as brothel goes, we were once in somewhere and my mate said to me, I'm going to have that bit, and one was a big black girl, a big well-made bosom, big, real big. Well, I said, she's too big for you, nothing of the sort. Anyway, when she come over, he said, sit down, and he got her a drink, and upstairs, and she picked him up just like that, you know, and she balanced him on her chest, and she was walking up, and she was saying, oh, my babby, my curly-headed babby, and he was keep saying, ah, babby, if I knew me. Ah, he was a... He was a bit of a lad, that one. But I never had call to go to these places because I'd never been in Brussels. It was a good idea, wasn't it? Yeah.
Was it an offence to catch VD in the army regulations?
As I say, I know very little about it because I suppose when you're on active duty, they could call it, unable to attend duty. I don't know. I've never heard of nobody in our lot. I've got to be fair, I've never heard of one case. Not one case. That was in our company, headquarter company. I don't think I never heard of one case where men... there was lads out of headquarter company that went into Brussels, but I never heard of a case where a lad had VD, or was suspected VD. Of course, we've got short-arm inspections regularly, you know. Regularly, excuse me, strip off and then get the short, maybe go pretty regularly. More often, what got your feet looked at. I've had them regularly, yes. Oh, they're very strict. And that these stations, I told you, in the main places where you went in and, I've been with a girl and they have to treat you, wash you and treat you.
Was mail coming through from home?
Oh, yes. I've never had no problems.
How important is it to receive mail?
Oh, yes, it's very important, I suppose, to Now, how can I put this to be fair? When we first left Granite Guard, Glasgow, I went down the Clyde. I was standing at the back of the ship looking at the shore, you know, trying to fix it, get a fixation. See, I'll remember that all the days of my life. And next to me was this poor lad, he'd been married, and I believe he belongs round about Durham, Ushamo, or somewhere there. He'd had 48 hours leave before he got on the boat. And, you know, now to such lads as him, he'd look forward to his meal. And now me, I was practically an orphan. My mum died when I was 10, and my sister brought us up, and I was there. And to me, it was just an adventure. It was just, when I got a letter from IOC Ray, didn't put me in my town. I was never worried that way. The only one thing that worried me, all the time, in my service, was this bleeding thought I had about getting shot in the legs and getting my legs up. And I think if I'd had the courage, if I'd gotten shot in the legs and I knew my legs was to come off, I'd have shot myself, you know. I was deluded that much. No, apart from that, nothing perturbed me at all. I wasn't perturbed about nothing, you know. I tell you, if I'd had a... When that bloke come with that big gun, if I'd had something in my hand that would have stopped it, I wouldn't have been here now. I'd had to go at him, you know. He'd have wiped us out, like, you know, but I'd had to go at him. You can't ever go with strange anything. And that part of my life, it's stuck in me across all my life. Straight away through for years after, I used to blame the sergeant, I used to blame the corporals, and I used to blame the officers, and I used to say, you know, everybody look after himself, sort of style, and that we were left holding the candle, and I was vexed about it. Real, real, real vexed.
When you moved from Cyprus, where did you go?
Went over to Haifa.
What date would this be?
Well, it would be about towards the back end of the year, say. In them warm countries in the Mediterranean, I mean, in England, you know, when it gets cold, it gets windy. Well, there, it doesn't get cold, you know, yeah. I would say it would be about September, October. I went across to Haifa. I remember we had a night, and maybe two nights out in a place called Tel Aviv. One night was plenty because everything was terrible there. After being in Cyprus, you know, it was cheap in Cyprus. Everything was cheap, no matter what you wanted, it was cheap. When we went to Tel Aviv, everything was there. If you got a couple of bottles of beer out your pier, you were rotten. So I didn't care much about Tel Aviv. Anyway, we weren't there very long, and we started moving up. I'll tell you a story about that. We got caught again. There, when we first got off the boat, you know, these little Arabs or Jews or whatever they were, these little, like, wire knitting bags, you know, you've seen them, like, old members, a dozen lovely, these lovely oranges, you know. You have corned beef? Yeah, why? Oranges for corned beef? Why, you know where to start the corned beef. We never used to have that much. And, made a hell of a trade there, you know. Tell the lads, some oranges. Lovely, oh, you never seen them. We all bought ourselves a pack of oranges, you know. And when we got on the wagons and moved out there, tell everybody, we didn't go 20 yards, 100 yards, and the right side of the road. Nothing but oranges grow for miles among it. You know, they were grown like blackberries. And I thought, why, we've been caught again. Everywhere we went, there's always somebody waiting for you to catch it. Even when we're in the desert, somebody would pop out the sand and shout, "Eggs of bread, Johnny, eggs of bread." And my mate would say to me, "How the hell's he know the corn made, Johnny?" What's so really laughable. But that's where we landed at Haifa, and went from Haifa and Tux, and got on the Tux. And
what are your memories of that journey?
Boring, terrifically boring. Boring, and we always had the feeling that we were trespassing. I thought, we trespassing here. This has nothing to do with this. And you know, I mean, it's obvious that if the Germans had broken down through the Caucasus, and I'm not being detrimental to nobody when I say this, we'd have been in a hell of a lot of trouble, I mean, when the Germans come, they come with tanks and tanks and tanks. And infantry can't stop tanks unless they've got the proper material. That's one point I didn't like about the British Army. They were still living in the days of 1914, 18 war. And it showed, until we started getting stuff from America, it showed. I mean, it showed in France, Dunkirk, it showed all them places. Our equipment wasn't good enough. You know, we hadn't moved with the times where the Germans were prepared and had the equipment. And if they'd broken down through the Caucasus, they'd have swooped down to take the oil fields of Iran, Iraq, and been a pincer movement on the Suez Canal, wouldn't it? That would have been the end of the Middle East, in my opinion. And I couldn't see us. Like, might have delayed them, maybe, I don't know, but we couldn't have, you know, would have been in a bit of trouble.
To come back to the journey, do you recall you'd be obviously passing through different types of country?
Oh, aye, I sort of liked Transjordan. We used to call it Transjordan.
What did you like about it?
I don't know, little, like crocuses. They weren't crocuses, I don't suppose, but they reminded me of crocuses. The only thing is about these countries where everybody says, bah, beautiful, the same is terrific. They're like a purple brown colour, see? And you realise that later on when you come home and you see the green dust of the River Clyde outside. Might be a bit dirty, the green dust, but it's beautiful, you know. And you go into these places, it's more of a purple brown, you know. But there was a few flowers mixed in, and I thought it was pretty, you know. But when you get in Iraq and Iran, there's mile upon mile of bleeding desert. And not just sand, it's pebbles, you know. I know when we got up to Iraq, the first thing we did was clean a place to make a football pitch, you know, back down away. And the stones we got off, the size of the football, the stones we got off there was, you know, nobody's business. Could have still been there taking the stones off, you know, the terrible ground. And when we went through Baghdad, where they were anti-British, you know, some cases of peppers with rotten eggs and tomatoes and what were our elements, and some cases some lads put the gas mask on, I think. But
had you been ordered to go through with your helmet?
We were ordered not to go in. We couldn't, if we went in, we had to go in tents. You know, it wasn't a place for us to be in Baghdad. So I'd read a lot about these romantic places in the Middle East, and Baghdad was the foremost. And it's a dirty, sprawly, mucky, dirty place. I care nothing about Baghdad. Care nothing about it.
The stages of your journey. Do you recall where you stopped? What happened to you when you stopped for the night? What time would you?
We used to drive. Was it 6-7 hours? Then stop, and all infantry lads used to get out and march the last 4 miles. That was to keep the feet, I suppose, in, you know. And they had a bit gummel about it, but they used to get out and walk the last 4 miles. No, I would come anywhere. I mean, that's active service.
Again, were you in bivouacs or bigger tents?
Oh, the ground sheets. When we got there, we had big tents, yes. When we got into Iraq, we were tent. Because we had to take so much of the ground away to get there. It was pretty bad weather when we got there.
Did you stick to the road in single file on your way through, or were you able to spread out on your journey going through?
Somebody said that they had 3 airfields, and our main job was to take the airfields. Why, they hadn't put much resistance up, because the time we got there, they were took. So somebody was saying they fired a couple of shots, and then they fired.
Who's this, the Iraqis?
They had some bits of airfields that was like...
Habaniya, the big airfield. You remember getting there?
Yes, I remember the name now. We all come to say it, yes. We squirted with all these places, and then we dug in, I remember places. Names like Kirkuk and Mosul, and we thought we'd all get leave to go into Kirkuk, you know, it's a pretty large town, high town, you know. We thought we'd have a gang time there, but we never allowed out, we weren't allowed there. In fact, our biggest fear was disease. The dogs carried rabies, and these people, I've seen them. You know, if a camel dropped down the side of the road and dead, they'd cut it up. It wasn't pretty, no, it was cut up for meat, you know, and the I don't know, dirty type of paper. To me, like, I didn't care much about them. I noticed that when we passed the oil fields, which was operated by British personnel, and I think in some cases there were some Americans there. I'm not sure in mind about this, but I think there would be. They were wired in, and they had their own little compound, and they had their own cinema and bathing pools, and a little community, you know. And they were very pushy over the let in. Certainly none of the wugs, you know. And I believe that was the first order we got. We showed our dogs and said, if they're coming in the camp, I'd shoot them. Because somebody said after that, the next order we'll get to shoot all wugs. Because they were terrible, persistent, you know. Exhibit. And, you just needed a shot above the heads, and off the, you know, they'd be off forever more. But,
did they attempt to steal from you?
Oh, aye. They had to sit up all night. When he had the tents, I think the idea was he'd nudge the next man half an hour on and nudge him, you turn, Jerry, and you went to sleep. And he, or either did steal him off. We just put all hours in the middle of the tent, you know.
That's his equipment.
The brain guns and the rifles and the, you know, everything was in the middle of the tent. And we slept around the tent. And it pinch anything. If you left your rifle 5 minutes, they'd have pinch. They're the type of people I didn't care much about them, Adams, I tell you the truth.
You were there in pretty cold conditions. What was life like?
Oh, because we went right through Iran and Iraq, and all the time we were moving north into the Caucasus. We'd been in the foothills of the Caucasus. The time we maybe had a good old tent up. Well, it was hard. It was hard. It was pretty much winter conditions. We wanted all our balaclavas on and all our woolens on. We set off diving for my fair with nothing on, just you were supposed to wear your uniform, but we had a pair of shirts on, little way, just skimpy things, and boots and stockings. Nothing on after that, you know. And that's how we progressed. We just a little bit clothing on like that. But when we got up towards where our destination was, right, we were up past this. I remember this big river that was still back there. I don't know what it's called. It's the Tigris. I remember that, saying that, you know. But it was, I tell you, but no fun thought about Iraq, Iran. To me, it was a chore. And I didn't like the people, I didn't like the countryside, and I didn't like the where they lived. And when I was in Cyprus, I was happy as a king.
The rations that you were getting in Iraq.
What you get in action, you know, it's corned beef. You can have it fried, boiled, stewed, roasted, any way you like, but it's corned beef, eh? And I think that was one good point about the British Army, and I found that out afterwards. I'll tell you all about it afterwards. I know we used to eat our corned beef and our biscuits, pig clean biscuits, whatever they were. And later on, when I was in with the Italians and the Germans, and I was with chocolate, in comparison, I was fantastic. I mean, I've earned that grumbling blue corned beef again, you know. What else could you get? You can't get white bread and butter and jam, but just to check what's there. But they're really nutritious, really the best. You know, that was one thing that was the best. Far exceeded the Germans or the Italian Russians. The Italians were terrible. But the English corned beef and was fermentous, you know, if you get fermentous, the best of corned beef and the biscuits, they're very, very, very nutritious. Very nutritious. I know how it was monotonous getting it every day, but, you know, they were really good.
You were living in tents, you said?
When we got to the top of the Iraq,
When you got to your camp, final position there, you were living in tents there.
Yeah.
How many men to a tent?
Well, there'd be a few. The biggest tents. I couldn't tell you exact.
Were they just ground, or did you dig them in?
We dig them in. It was some... I tell you, that's why we got a pamphlet out. You always pick and some of them. You strike it like that, and then you heave, and then you... Aye. Yeah, maybe 16, I don't know. 12, 16, maybe more than that. I know it was that cold. I think that was the first. I think we got a rum ration there. I'm not sure where. And I think I was the NCO on duty at the time. And I can remember.
You'd been promoted, had you?
I was Lance Corporal. I don't know why I don't. It was just something that happened. I think if I'd gone much further, what I would have done was I'd have gone all the way or knocked it off altogether, you know. Because I couldn't abide a lot of people telling us what to do. And when you're a corporal, you're pretty much your own boss, you know. When you're a sergeant, you've got liabilities. When you're a corporal, you can switch them to the lance corporal, you know. Any road, I was never one, I wasn't ambitious, like, I didn't want to. But I got a stipend, yes, I had a stipend.
And you would have duties to perform that?
Ah, a bit so, yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, I think I remember Morris Kirby coming in and him and I went round. Well, Morris liked to drink, you know, I call him Lieutenant Kirby, a grand fella. He's famous for, he captured Rommel's chair, can you remember, the swivelling chair, didn't he? That's what he's famous for, yeah. Well, when I knew him, he was a lieutenant, and he was married to a local girl about 100 yards up the road, whose father and mother had, in them days we used to say they had money. What you and I would class as being middle-class people, you know, that pitch houses as Bishop Orton, they had a pound or two, big, nice, 10-room house up there, you know, just the top of the land there, it's still there. But he was a lad I could get on very well with, he's a footballer, he used to play for Bishop Orton. And played in the same with me.
So what duties were you performing?
Oh, apparently, we did the... No, just training, digging in, and no, general things, just keep us busy, you know. You know, did a bit more to train, and little bits of schemes, you know, and got to know the locality. Because if they, you know, you had to get to know the locality and where all the spotties were, all the depressions were, and get to know the best way out of yours you're going. And we passed time away, bits of schemes on our own, you know, like, getting to know the country sort of stuff. As far as that thing's motor was concerned, getting to know.
What was the terrain like that you were actually living
in? Oh, where we were at? Oh, aye, it was when the foothills of some type of mountain there. We'd have given a decent account of ourselves, but against the armoured attack, we'd have been in a bit of trouble, I think, you know. I think it was a measure just to sort of satisfy the morale of the Russians, maybe, saying why the British is just 200 miles down the road, they'll come. But they didn't need us, they stopped them themselves. And man, they didn't stop them till the last yard or two, but they stopped them. And that's, I thank God for that many times, I was telling the truth. I did.
You mentioned that you cleared the ground for football.
Oh, yes, yes.
And was this between companies and
players? Aye, how we got to the final. And we never got it played off. We played it and we got a draw. He's another unpleasant part of my past. I don't know for sure where. But I think that we got a penalty and I missed it. I know I couldn't sleep for days. The lads wouldn't let us sleep for days after. And we had lads in our team who were footballers. You know, I wasn't a footballer. I just went to make the number up. But, I mean, such as Morris Kirby played for Bishop Orton, he's the amateur internationally, one of the best in the country amateurs. And there was Kenny Humber played for Bishop Orton. They were good footballers, Singlewood lads. One of them was a quartermaster sergeant. Bishop Orton, 20 years after the war, he stopped in the army, like sort of said. And they were good footballers, you know. And we're a good team ourselves. We had a good team.
What other leisure activities had you?
Football, that was it. We played a game until we got to the final, I tell you, and all the battalion turned out to see the final. Or maybe it's more, all I know the national officers there. And I tell you, I believe we won the piece, so was it nothing? I think we got a penalty, and I think I put it over the top. I can't remember that bit, I don't want to remember it, you know. I believe I missed the goal.
You didn't get involved in local shoots or hunting or...
Why, I've heard them say that they went looking for gazelle and things like that. I never had the opportunity. I've heard them say, my mate, he'd been on a one, so he told me, with a, he drove a Bengal carrier. I said, well, that's too bleeding slow, isn't it? And, you know, they get this little wild bird or pig, and he'd be, He said, I put a magazine in, with the men going. He said, I must have missed it. Anyway, we got it, and it was Christmas. It must have been Christmas time, but put some poles up and hung it up. And you know, these all the lads that keep saying, oh, I know they do this. They shave the hair off and take it. Boy, they were tough. And finished that to skin them. And that was our Christmas dinner. And wasn't a big pig, you know, it was only tough as bloody Harry. And you know, I think I've got a bit dipping bread, I'm not sure. It was for a lot of men.
Do you remember your Christmas meal?
Ah, yeah.
What were the contents?
Well, they always tried to, I'll give them benefit, they always tried to create atmosphere, you know, for Christmas. And we sung a few songs, you know, maybe got a kind of beer. And what else happened with a lot of the teetotalers and a lot of non smokers and that, they would swap the cigarettes, you know, and the chocolate, and you find out maybe four or five men would finish up with four or five tins of beer, and they also have a bit of a party, you know, where the teetotalers would go up and go and guard it. And we used to, we've got a bit of atmosphere, you know, as good as we could get. When you're on active service, Christmas Day to me, like, it's the same as any other day. So that way, now you get your church prayed on the morning, church, open our church. The padre and the vicar come along, and the father, whatever they are, and they come along, and you go and sing, you know, Abide With Me and all that. That was another bone of contention when we first joined up in England, what we call a church prayer. And we first got to church, and I don't believe in that, like, you know. I think it's been rescinded since then. But I can't see any reason why a man shouldn't, on a Sunday morning, should be first with prayer and go to church. See, that was another old thing out of the old British Army, the old colonial system. You know, it's a parade, you've got to pray. See, what if I'm not too British, where you stand at attention outside, it's a parade, you know, just see all sorts of things. But if I could get off anybody else, you know, I'd do normally anything to get off. I would. Because I don't like to feel it, because I mean, it's bad enough now when we go to church now. Excuse me, when there's a wedding or a funeral, and I feel awful. But you know, I can't explain it, but it's hypocritical to me. Like, the only thing so that
coming back to your Christmas meal, where did you have it?
Well, just outside.
Must have been pretty cold.
Oh aye, oh yes. Uh-huh, uh-huh. We weren't far away off the Caucasus, you know. Yeah, that's the range of mountains between Iran and Russia, you know. I were well up there. But
where was the cooking done, and how was it done?
Oh, outside. Outside, the cookhouses were made outside, yeah. Oh, very rough places they were, you know, and very, there was very little, the food was monotonous, but it was as good as could be expected. Well, after service, you don't expect, you know, Yorkshire puddings and potatoes and Brussels sprouts and that, do you? You get what's going.
How did you keep warm in the tents in the middle of that harsh winter?
Oh, that was, we were cold. But everything gone we had, I think, you know.
Slept in uniform and clothing?
Well, we weren't supposed to, you know. That's a question I can't really answer fairly, but I know it was very cold, you know, and the part about it, I think, was the cold coming up on his neck, you know. I don't know if we got palliasis or not, I tell you the truth, I couldn't even remember. I remember digging in the trench, and I remember being cold.
Did you have any stoves or heating of any kind?
No, there's I can remember some type of oil that used to drip on a plate, and they used to cope with it. I don't know. What, you know, I wasn't interested in things like that. I know it was very cold. I'll tell you, when we turned round and come back down, I was crazy as punch. I was honest. And every day we shed a bit clothing, and we had what they call cap comforters on our heads, you know. Muffers around the open, just the eyes and great coats and everything you can imagine we had, and by the time we got down to Palestine, and all them had been shed, and back in the kid bag, and that's it. We just bought the shirts again.
When did you leave?
So that just shows how far we went. Eh?
When did you leave Iraq?
Well, we weren't there very long, I don't think. We were there 8 weeks, 7 months, something like that. I know when we left, we were all muffled up. By the time we got back down to the showies, we were back down in the church again, you know.
Did you know where you were going when you left? Did they tell you where you were heading for?
I suppose they maybe did, but I never. No, they just said that we were the mobile division and we were expected to close gaps, you know, and we were expected to go and close these gaps. It doesn't matter where they occurred at, we had to go and like Cyprus, Iraq, and then up the desert, you know, close them places up.